You're listening to Vatican Radio, the UK's special representative on preventing sexual violence in conflict. Baroness Joyce Annerley was in Rome this weekend to speak to religious men and women caring for survivors of sexual violence in conflict countries around the world. Since 2012, the British government has been spearheading a global initiative to prevent and respond to the problem of rape being used as a weapon of war for ethnic cleansing or to terrorise local populations. In 2014, a global summit in London brought together politicians, civil society and international organisations to agree on a practical action plan. Last year, an international conference gathered faith leaders from different traditions to discuss ways of challenging prejudices, supporting survivors and documenting evidence of crimes committed. At her closed-door meeting with religious working on justice and peace issues for their different congregations, the British minister commended the determination and commitment of Catholic religious men and women. She said they have a vital role to play in the struggle to end sexual violence in conflict, noting that frequently they are the only ones on the ground during and long after conflicts have ended. The work of religious brothers and sisters is often a very difficult and dangerous task, which is why Baroness Annerley wanted to hear firsthand about ways in which her government can support and fund the work that they're doing.
What I want to be able to do is to support the work they're doing as well, so we can work together, because I admire the way in which members of religious communities have this constancy of work for those in the most conflicted areas around the world. So often, when it's so dangerous that other NGOs leave, it is the religious who stay. They understand the local communities. They understand perfectly how best to help. And I think we can learn from each other, but we can give support, particularly in the way that we can fund work to collect information about these horrific attacks on women, and we can then bring the perpetrators to account, and we can also provide support for the important social and psychosocial services that are vital to help people to survive rather than just be victims.
This is about helping the survivors, as you say, working with the women. But it's important that you're reaching out or wanting to work together with not just the sisters, but also the priests, the brothers who are there as well. It's about men too, isn't it?
Absolutely right. And I was delighted to hear a presenter a moment ago say that he recognised it was important to work with male religious and men around communities. I've seen this through other organisations like Care International, making it clear this is about all of us. We all have a role to play in making it clear that sexual violence in conflict is wrong, it's not acceptable. It's used as a way of terrorising and subjugating communities, and we all have a role to ensure that it stops.
Your priority, I understand, this year is precisely tackling the taboo that surrounds the victims, the survivors. This is a big uphill struggle in many countries, isn't it?
It certainly is, because it's so deep-rooted. But that makes it a difficult job that's very much worthwhile doing, because if a victim suffers stigma, it is on many different levels. It's a case of, do they report what has happened to them? Because if they do, they're frightened that their family may reject them, their community may reject them. It may be so much as being told they have to live outside the village. They lose access to their children. And, of course, if they have a child as a result of rape, they know that it's a double stigma, because the child will be victimised too. So in those circumstances, tackling the whole issue of stigma, for me, is the most essential work we can do this year and in the future. It's a long-term project, but it's one that we must launch and must engage support around the world to ensure it succeeds.
You're asking the churches to be involved in this, and yet quite often it's perhaps the churches, the faith communities, that find it hardest to tackle the questions of sexuality, to talk openly about the issues that these women are facing.
I understand the sensitivities, but I also know that the religious have the greatest sensitivity of all, because they see people day by day at their most vulnerable. And what I seek to do is to work with them to explain how it is possible to discuss sexuality in a way that is compassionate and is consistent with the work that they seek to do.
You visited a number of countries, haven't you? I'm thinking, for example, of Turkey and Iraq, or you're also in Bosnia and Kosovo, I believe, looking at how the survivors are being supported. In many of these countries, the Catholic Church is a very tiny minority, isn't it? What kind of impact can it have, do you think?
It can have tremendous impact because it can work with other faiths. And I saw firsthand the work that was being done in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where a Tear Fund, whom we helped to fund, Tear Fund, were bringing together the leaders of the Catholic faith, of Anglican Church, and of Islam in areas around Goma, to have cross faith work with the chiefs of the community to ensure that those who are victims of sexual violence and conflict, both men and women, were enabled to stay within the community. Indeed, were given a goat so they could. It was a signal that they had an economic future. So the Catholic Church may be small in number. It is tremendous in its reach and tremendous in the respect that it has around the world. Regardless of one's faith, one respects the work of the Church.
In Bosnia, you noted that NGOs are doing a great job in this task of supporting victims, and yet the responsibility, you insist, is on the governments. But isn't it something of a paradox that the more that faith groups, NGOs are doing, the less the governments are likely to shoulder this responsibility?
That is indeed the challenge. It is clear that where there is bad governance, then you have attacks on people in terms of conflict. You also have an undermining of human rights. But the most important thing to do, of course, is to support those who are in need, but at the same time to deal with the very problem you outline, which is the weakness of governance. And therefore, at a political level, we work to ensure that there is a reduction of corruption. Indeed, only last week in the United Kingdom, our Prime Minister hosted a summit to tackle corruption around the world. So we can do that at a political level, but we must never forget the help that every individual needs and should have for a better life. Who can turn their back on a victim and say it's somebody else's job to help? No, we don't turn away.
You've introduced this international protocol, haven't you, on trying to prevent sexual violence in conflict. I'm wondering how much success, what sort of achievements have you had since it's been introduced? Is it having any impact?
Indeed, yes, it is. The international protocol is a handy guide. It looks rather long, but it's to cope with the fact that in different countries we need to approach the collection of evidence in different sensitive ways. And, of course, it's currently translated into nine different languages, so it's easier for people to use to get access to it. It is having an effect. For example, in some countries such as Bosnia and Herzegovina, it means that people who have committed crimes 20 years ago are being not only brought to court now for the first time, but are being successfully prosecuted because of the robust way in which the evidence has been collected and preserved. And we are also helping people to use the protocol and collect evidence across Syria in the most dangerous of circumstances. I salute their courage. It may be a long time before there is enough peace to bring people to justice there, but with the help of the collection of evidence and its safe storage through the use of the protocol, it can happen. There can be the end to impunity.
How important is the whole question of compensation for victims of sexual violence?
I find it interesting that many victims of sexual violence say, it's not about the money and compensation. For me, it's about being believed. So they say, I want there to be a prosecution of the perpetrator. I want there to be a public recognition that what happened to me was unforgivable. It was illegal. It should never have happened. But at the end of the day, whether there is money to be paid or whether there is a prison sentence to be served, for me, the best thing to know is that when I tell the story of what happened so long ago, or what happened just a few months ago, that I'm believed, I'm the one who's respected.
Finally, at a personal level for you, this is a pretty hard job to do, isn't it? Going around listening to these horrendous stories. Where do you draw your strength, your encouragement to carry on with this work?
Very much from the victims themselves, because they tell the story of a life that I can barely imagine. And they tell the story of their own courage in surviving. And for me, that makes it all the more important that I not only continue the work I can do, but I spread that enthusiasm to others. Because this means changing sometimes the way that people have lived for decades, changing it in a way that they want to stop conflict, they want to stop inter-tribal conflict, international conflict, and they want to be able to respect people for who they are. I find every time that I visit somewhere like northern Nigeria or Iraq or in indeed the Democratic Republic of Congo, and I look into the eyes of the victims, I know why it's important the next day, the next year, to carry on the work. And it's important for everybody around the world to see it as the most important thing they can do.
My thanks to Baroness Joyce Annerley, the UK's Human Rights Minister and Special Representative on Preventing Sexual Violence in Conflict.